Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Phil Colicchio. Let's get down to business. You're listening to Phil Colicchio, hosting the Business of the Business, the radio show here on the Heritage Radio Network that explores the business side of the hotel and hotel hospitality and restaurant businesses operating throughout the United States. And wearing live here on the Heritage Radio Network. If you missed this broadcast, you can find us archived at heritageradionetwork.org and as a podcast on iTunes. Folks, part of our mission here on the Business of the Business is to bring insights to our audience on aspects of the hospitality industry that you really just can't get by watching a reality television show or reading a book. And today we're actually going to take you into that world and give you a taste of what reality TV can do for a person who does well with it. And I want to introduce everybody today and welcome Chef Kevin Spraga, who is a veteran of reality television pop culture, but he's also a neophyte restaurant owner and operator operating in the sixth borough of New York, also known as Philadelphia.
Thank you, Phil.
Pennsylvania. Kevin, good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Very happy to be here.
Ah, it's great. And it's always sunny in Philadelphia, isn't it?
Always.
That's
every day.
That's great. That's terrific. That's terrific. I want to tell the audience a little bit about you and your background before I begin to pry into your personal life and your business life. Mm-hmm. But I'm always intrigued to see how a person was raised and to see what their relationship with business and money was even early on. Now, you came from a family of bakers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Both of my parents were bakers, so... Mm-hmm. I mean, I learned how to walk in the bakery. I learned how to talk in the bakery. I learned how to crawl in the bakery. Everything. It just all really started there. So when that happens, you have a love for food at a very young age. And, you know, it kind of grew on me and through me throughout my life.
Was the bakery, was it a retail bakery?
It was a retail bakery.
Yeah. Tell me where.
It was in Willingboro, New Jersey. We also had one in Pensauken, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. My father had up to 5 at one time. It was a bit much for him to manage. He's sort of a control freak. I hope he didn't hear that, but well, you know, that's part of the story.
Did that rub off on you, being a control freak?
It did, but I'm a little bit smarter. I realize I can't do everything myself, and I try to delegate and mm-hmm. find the right people around me to delegate to.
Well, that sounds like some on the job learning. One of the things that I find extremely curious about your career path is that you've had the, you know, I think we've joked about it, saying it's been ass backwards. And by that I mean, as the result of competing and winning the Top Chef competition mm-hmm. that is on Bravo Network, season 7, mm-hmm. Which was, I understand, one of the highest rated Top Chef seasons ever, and controversial in many ways. But you won that competition after performing admirably in the finals in Singapore, and you became a star.
Well, I don't know that I call myself a star. I mean, I'm a chef.
Well, but I'll say it. You became a star. I saw with my own eyes you would be stopped on the street, that you would be stopped in restaurants, right. That you'd be waved at from buses, mm-hmm. in every city that we were together.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's no denying that the show changed my life. One thing that's a big misconception is, honestly, I did the show out of desperation. I was desperate. I was desperate for my own restaurant. And I felt that was the quickest, fastest, purest way to make that happen. I had worked for other people for a long time, or what I believe to be a long time. And I just wanted to do my own thing. And that kind of goes back to that control thing. I want to do my own thing because I want to have control. I want to make the decisions.
Right.
I wanted to cook the food that I wanted to cook, when I wanted to cook it, and how I wanted to cook it.
Well, we're going to get to that. And I really want to talk about your current restaurant, Spraga, mm-hmm. that's doing so well in Philadelphia, that's gaining so many accolades, that's satisfying so many people in that region. The but still exists for me. You came out of the womb effectively as a star before you ever served a dish, and I compare that in many ways to. There's a chef you know, and a chef that I know very well. His name mm-hmm. is Tom Colicchio.
Mm-hmm.
And when Tom Colicchio and his then-partner Danny Meyer decided to open Gramercy Tavern, before they served a single dish, New York Magazine had them on the cover with the inscription underneath saying, "Best restaurant ever?" Question mark.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking with Tom at that point, and he felt pressure. He never feels pressure, but he felt huge pressure. You must have felt huge expectations after winning that competition, developing a following, and then having to follow it up physically with a restaurant.
Definitely. I mean, anytime you put yourself out in the spotlight, you put yourself in front of millions of viewers, and then you try and back it up with your own restaurant, yeah, you feel the pressure. But I don't think you go on television or you don't try and open your own restaurant without that. You have to expect that, and you got to embrace it,
mm-hmm.
and you got to be ready for it. And honestly, it's a competition every single day. Every single day when we open the door at 8:00 in the morning, it's a competition to get the best product in there at the best possible price and to prepare it better than any of our other competitors.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of carries on throughout the day. And every single day is a competition.
So you say that like a veteran. But I'm going to say you're not a veteran. You know, you've probably earned some real battle scars in the last 12 months.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
If you kind of look at it, honestly, I took the crash course. I didn't. I didn't go the route that most other chefs do.
No.
You know, they open their restaurant and gain critical acclaim and work their way up that way. My acclaim came first, and then the restaurant came second. So it really is an ass backwards.
Yeah.
But when that happens, I'm the type of guy, you push me into a corner, I'm going to come out fighting, and that's really my personality. That's mm-hmm. it. And, you know, at the end of the day, we want a great restaurant. We want one of the best restaurants in the country, and that's the bottom line. That's the goal.
Well, the name of our show is The Business of the Business. So now I want to talk a little bit about what Top Chef did for you from a business perspective. Now, most people who tune in,
mm-hmm.
and it's become a pretty iconic piece of our culture now, they know that you win a prize of $100,000 to $150,000. I think you won $125,000.
Exactly.
And did you also win some other money along the way?
Yeah, there was some other money and a trip that I got as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the big bulk of it was the $125,000.
Now, did you also after winning Top Chef? Did you make some appearances and get fees for that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that completely changes. And that's something that, again, was a crash course. You come off the show and, you know, people start talking to you about these things. Oh, I want you to appear here and you'll get paid for this and you do this and this limo or this car picks you up and you take this flight. And, you know, it's all cool. But
just like Willingboro, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Just like growing up in Willingboro, New Jersey.
Exactly.
I'm sure.
It's a game changer. It's a life changer. But you have to approach that like a business as well. I mean,
did you save the money?
No, I spent it all in a restaurant.
Well, that's what I mean. Did you save it?
Yeah, I mean,
you didn't go down to Atlantic City and put it on black and say, let's roll it, see if we can double it up.
I like gambling, but not that way.
Got it.
You know, for me, like I said, the whole purpose of the show was to win and to open my own restaurant. And when that opportunity came, it was my responsibility to do the most with that money.
Okay, so I'm hearing you. And once again, I'm smiling as I'm watching you describe this, because it's as if you presumed you would win.
You know, going into the competition, the day I left for the competition, I knew I had what it takes to win.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got there, honestly, I got shook. I got scared. I got nervous and second-guessed myself in every single way, in every aspect of my life. And then there's a little period in between the regular season and the finale, and I had the opportunity to think back and reflect. A few episodes had already aired, and you start seeing yourself, and you're like, wow, I'm a retard. Why did I do that? What was I thinking? But you kind of learn from it, and I'm the type of person, once I'm removed from a situation and then put back into it, I grow, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, that's interesting, because you shared a story with me not too long ago that really gave me pause. You really were up against it before that show came on the air.
Absolutely.
Tell us what was going on in your life at that point, because it sounds pretty incredible. You were married, you had a child.
Mm-hmm.
And tell
us. Yeah, I married, had a child, and was unemployed for 18 months.
18 months.
It was honestly the toughest point in my life and my professional career ever. I couldn't find a job that I wanted or really liked or really embraced. It was difficult. I mean, you know, I knew what I wanted to do and knew where I wanted to go, but didn't know how to get there. And that desperation is really what made me reach out and apply for Top Chef.
And you weren't a particular fan of that show, were you?
I mean, not really. I mean, I could never imagine myself on television. And then, you know, I'm that guy that's you know, looking at it and saying, why is this person doing this? Why is that person doing that?
Well, it's right. And you're kind of like Joe Sixpacking it, right? Like, sitting there with my can of light beer and my t-shirt, not working,
right?
Criticizing everybody that's on TV trying. And you finally got to a point where you said, all right, I know a couple people on that show and they're doing okay. I can do it.
Yeah. You know, season six, I applied for season six. I didn't make it on and felt like, all right, well, it's not for me. I tried. That's the end of it. Watch season six, watch Michael Voltaggio win.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with Mike for 3 years. I worked with Hun Nguyen for 1 year. Both of these guys, you know, all three of us worked together. I'm like, if they can do it, I know I can do it. And I was really inspired by them and decided to apply for the show one more time. I had already missed the deadline, but the producer said, if you get me the tape and you get me the package within the next 3 days, we'll take a look at it. Woke up the next morning, got it done, sent it out that day. And the rest was kind of history.
That's a great story. I hope Mike and Hung listen to this, because Kevin lists you as inspirations, and I know he takes inspirations very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So helping him get a foot up when he was down is something that I think your friends can be proud of.
Absolutely.
And rightfully proud of.
And for me, I feel the same way with other people. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the way that I was inspired by them, I hope I'm able to inspire others.
Well, you know, inspiration comes in a lot of different packages and not always where you expect it. And I'm sure that I would say to you that I wouldn't expect to be inspired, you know, in Willingboro, New Jersey, right? to have a food passion,
right?
Okay, and for those of you who don't know, Willingboro is a sort of a South Jersey suburb of Philadelphia,
mm-hmm.
but it's pretty flat. It's pretty, well, I'll say it. It's pretty dull.
Yeah, it's very dull.
Okay, so it's pretty dull.
Very dull.
But you worked very hard when you were there. As a matter of fact, you won some scholarships, didn't you, while you were a high school student?
Well, I knew at a very young age that, again, I wanted to be in food, and this is what it was all about for me, and went to a vocational high school and was lucky enough to do a couple competitions then. And that led to a state competition, which led to a national competition, which led to a scholarship. And, you know, I was lucky enough to go to Johnson & Wales. And I don't know that that would have happened had I not competed.
Interesting. So you found yourself winning, competing and winning in competitions from an early age. You've won another competition, the Bocuse.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't win. I was selected for the semifinals. I got fourth place, but performed pretty well there.
Mm-hmm.
Actually won an award there for the best meat presentation. But yeah, that's a very different style competition, but indeed, it still is a competition.
So you're honing your competitive skills early on. I understand that competitive fire did not translate onto the baseball diamond.
No, it didn't work for baseball, football, basketball, swimming, none of those things.
Well, I'm glad it worked out in the area of your life that means the most to you. And I'm thrilled to hear that the show gave you such a personal and professional boost. Kevin, when we come back from a short break, I want to talk about the Spraga restaurant in Philadelphia. I want to talk about the effort that you've put into to making it spectacular. I want to talk about the challenges of being a minority business owner in a big town like Philadelphia. And I'm looking forward to hearing your stories about it. This is Phil Colicchio. You're listening to The Business of the Business here on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back after a short break.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Hey, welcome back to The Business of the Business. I'm Phil Colicchio. We are here with Chef Kevin Spraga, known as Top Chef Kevin Spraga, known as Chef Kevin Spraga, has actually been called, at least one time I'm aware of, the Barack Obama of cooking. You know, I do want to share with people, Kevin, your heritage, you're African-American and Italian, correct?
Correct. My mother, Italian-American. My father, African-American. When people look at me, they think I'm Latin, especially Puerto Rican. I am not. Then they look at my name and think I'm Caucasian, and I just don't look like
that.
Well,
you had the good sense to track down, woo, and marry a beautiful woman who of Puerto Rican descent.
Exactly. So, you know, if I couldn't be it, I got to join it.
That's great. Well, I always got a kick out of the Barack Obama of cooking description. Kevin, we walked through your Top Chef period. We also kind of crawled through a pretty desperate period in mm-hmm. your life before that. But Top Chef brought you fame and just enough fortune
mm-hmm.
to get started on your dream project. And that dream project opened about a year ago.
Exactly.
Right? Can you tell us about the restaurant and the thoughts behind it? And then we're going to turn to the business component of it.
Sounds good. So we opened Spraga last October.
And where'd you come up with that name?
I was blessed with that name. 440 South Broad Street in Philadelphia. Small, modern American restaurant, 65 seats. prefix menu. We change the menu often. We're in the process of a change right now. But it was really a place for me to showcase what I thought food should be, mm-hmm. as well as the team.
Great. Well, you know, I've watched a few episodes of Top Chef, and I've seen people sweat out competitions, but I've never seen a Top Chef episode where the contestant had to raise money to do something. And you actually had to raise money to get this restaurant that is at 440 mm-hmm. South Broad Street, which is the corner of Pine and Broad and Pine. Philadelphia. Again, the sixth borough.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about how you began to raise the money. What did you do? What was your biggest challenge?
The first challenge, and that challenge I had been dealing with for a couple years, 2-3 years, was writing a business plan and learning how to write a business plan, getting a good one to base mine off of. You can buy a program and it says you need this, this, and this, and people are not reading all that. And then you can look at someone else's that's one page long and you're like, well, that's not enough information. So really, it was finding something good and finding something that really stuck out. And then from there, it was passing that business plan on to people I believed in me.
Right. Now, a business plan. I'm a lawyer. I do a lot of work in this industry, so I know what a business plan is. I like to think I know what should be in one. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you felt was important to put in your business plan that to turn the light on for an investor.
There's a couple things. The mission statement. What is it that you're...
What was yours? What was your mission statement?
I can't remember.
About, right now. Generally.
It was about hospitality and being great in what we do and making a difference. We didn't want to be the restaurant that just fit in. We wanted to set a new trend, mm-hmm. to set a new standard. Components that are really important are the menu or the flow of the menu. Financial projections.
Financial projections are critical.
People need to know that can make or break a business plan.
Yep.
And, you know, just things like that. Those three components to me are the most important.
All right. So you were the new guy on the block mm-hmm. and you put together a business plan. And I know you brought together a pretty good team to, mm-hmm. to help you edit it and put it together and make it pass the smell test. Did you make any mistakes, particularly on your financial projections?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, if there's a chef or someone out there saying, no, they didn't, then they're fooling you.
Yeah.
There's a couple areas that everyone always struggles, you know, and that's cost of goods, food and beverage costs, and then labor.
Labor.
You think you can do one thing at this price and it doesn't happen, or you think you can get employees and at this price and that doesn't happen, or you think you're going to be this busy and you're not.
Yeah.
I mean, all that affects everything.
Yeah. So as you got that business plan together.
Mm-hmm.
How did you solicit the investors? What did you do? And did you have any? Were there any oddities that came up during that courtship?
Absolutely. Well, it really because of the show, people naturally came to me, and you got to weed out who is serious and who isn't. So you kind of do that, and then honestly, some of it I sent it to one person. And they're like, oh, do you mind if I share it with my friend? I'm like, no, go ahead. And that's how it kind of worked out. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I learned is, you know, some people didn't fit in with our business model, our business plan, our vision, and the investor group. And that was a challenge. And I'm sure a lot of other people face that.
So are you telling me that you said no thank you to an investor in your first restaurant who was ready to pony up some significant money?
I had to say no. And it wasn't for a small amount. It was for a very big amount. And it was very tough.
Wow. I'll bet that caused a sleepless night or two.
Oh yeah, definitely. But at the end of the day, I knew it was the right decision. That mm-hmm. all right, if you're not on game with us now, you know, what if something is not good later on? You're going to be the first one out. So
right.
It makes it difficult.
When I talk to chefs who have taken that leap to seek out investors, open their own restaurants. And then we talk about the money and the finances, which again I find are the no one talks about them in much of a public way, but it's restaurant 101. If you don't have a restaurant, you can't run a restaurant, and you have to be able to keep it open. When you began, you did something that was somewhat controversial in the market that you were in.
Mm-hmm.
And while this is a national show that we're doing, it's usually New York centric, but I'm such a big fan of Philadelphia and what goes on in Philadelphia and the food world and the development. You took a chance with a price fix menu at a very approachable price point. Were your investors really on board with that?
There were 70% were. Mm-hmm. There were a few that weren't, and it definitely caused a lot of questions.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I did enough studying and enough research to know that, you know, the big companies, the companies that do really well, they do it through volume, and we needed to do volume. Right. I didn't want to be expensive like the other restaurants in Philadelphia. I wanted to serve great quality food at an affordable price.
Well, to the listeners out there, particularly for New Yorkers, it's actually worth the gas and tolls you spend to drive down, because Kevin had a four-course $49 price fix of absolutely stunning food. And as a matter of fact, I would like to compliment you and congratulate you. Some people use the Zagat survey numbers as touchstones for what they think is great. And if you get a, you know, if you get a 24 or 25 for your food from Zagat's, you are really at the top of the scales. You just got a Zagat rating, didn't you?
Yeah, we just got our Zagat this week, and honestly, we scored a 27 on
27
food.
27 on food.
Yeah, we and honestly, I think next year we're going to be even better.
Is the price fix still?
Yeah, the prefix menu is still live and kicking. It's the backbone to what we do. We kind of work backwards. We set this price. This is the price. This is what our food cost needs to be. And this is what we can purchase in there. Instead of going and saying, oh, I really want this Kobe beef that you can't afford, and you put it on the menu and it's too expensive, and then you throw it away because no one buys it because it's too expensive. It's stupid.
You know, I think we're back to that ass backwards component
of your
career, Kevin. Well, it seems to be working for you.
Yeah,
you know,
you're a
breech baby, mm-hmm. I guess, as it relates to the restaurant industry. And I think that's I think you're right. You know what? Is that if it fits your style and if it fits your culture,
mm-hmm.
then you're a poster child for saying I'm going to do it my way. I know you had to make some changes along the way.
Absolutely.
What was the toughest change you had to make when you opened?
Controlling labor was one of them, and the other one was having the right people.
All right, I'm gonna trade on some inside knowledge. You had to replace after a couple of tough reviews. You had to replace a general manager.
Exactly.
And the reviews were uniform in that the food was great, the food was interesting, but the service was spotty.
You know, it's funny that you bring this up. I read my review from the Philadelphia Inquirer for the first time on Monday since January when it came out, and I read it completely differently. I took it personal, which may not be a bad thing. It is a good thing because I want to be the best and I want to do the best. But I really read what Craig LeBan was saying, and he was really cheering us on and saying, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
If you want to survive and be that top chef and be that great restaurateur, you need to fix this. And at that time, that's what I did. I fixed it. I had to replace somebody. I brought in someone that was well-known in the city, that really understands hospitality, that had his head on his shoulders at the time.
Right.
And service has completely changed. And the whole environment, the whole mood, everything about the restaurant is completely different.
I read that review in the same way. I felt as if that you were being viewed as an important part of the city, an important part of the new landscape of the city. Kevin, I want to ask you something really, really specific about this. We touched on your ethnicity, but you identify yourself as an African American.
Absolutely,
you're an African American business owner in a huge city. Have you had challenges that are unique to being an African American business owner in a city like Philadelphia?
I mean, there's always the challenges that everyone faces. You know, the biggest challenge for me is to get past the stigma. There's very few African-American chefs out there. Just look across the country.
Yeah.
Look in the kitchens.
Yeah.
You don't see it. Look at the studies. It's just not there. And so for me, my biggest challenge, again, is to set that example, to be a role model.
And you're, I happen to know that you're walking the walk in that regard. You're not just talking the talk. I know that you've taken interns on from the Philadelphia technical schools who have spent their time in the culinary arts program, and you've taken them and brought them into your restaurant to work and to work from the ground up, haven't you?
Absolutely. I mean, we had one kid, or have one kid, because he's still with us. Mm-hmm. He started maybe 2-3 weeks after we opened. And I'll tell you, this kid is absolutely amazing. And I've never, his work ethic, I haven't seen that in a 17-year-old ever, not even in myself.
Well, it's great to see that that's happening. It's great to see that you are taking yourself at your word, saying when you said earlier that you wanted to make a statement in Philadelphia, and that statement was to be a leader in the community that you're involved in. Kevin, you're doing that. I'm proud to know you.
Thank you.
I'm proud of what you've achieved. When we look at this, and we're going to wrap up now and give the audience a few things to think about, but I like to wrap up my shows by asking people who have climbed a couple of mountains, who have swam across a couple of rivers, if you had to give three pieces of advice to someone who wanted to become you, what would you say?
The first thing is, don't ever give up. Whatever that is, whatever that goal is, don't ever give up. The second thing is to really focus. A lot of times we get distracted, and you can't give up, and you got to stay focused. And the third thing is, you really got to believe in yourself. I've been in a position where I've lost confidence. It's one of the worst things that can happen. You got to be confident in what you do and your decision making.
Kevin? It was a pleasure to have you on. Folks, we're here with Kevin Sparaga, chef owner of Sparaga Restaurant. Keep your eye, folks, on the national food press over the next couple of weeks. I think you'll be seeing Kevin's name and his restaurant's name highlighted in a couple of national publications.
Awesome.
Thank you, Phil. Kevin. Keep up the good work. What'd you think of that pizza we had earlier?
Yeah, pizza was pretty dynamite.
Great to be here at Roberta's. Thanks, everybody. Till next time, Phil Colicchio and the Business of the Business on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.